stuff that's floating skyward underneath the blanket, that was exactly what we were just talking about in our first segment. In case you missed the beginning of it, I was interviewing Jim Pugh. He was a lawyer with the Earth Justice Organization, and he is the lawyer behind four, count them, four lawsuits that finally got the attention of the Environmental Protection Agency to clamp down on cement plant pollution. So that is some positive news. It is the first ever cap on mercury, and mercury, of course, is a big problem for humans. So that's what we were talking about last time. If you want to catch the entire interview, go to the website, www.greenfront.com. Also, you can catch us live every Wednesday from 11 to 12 California time, 2 to 3 East Coast time on the Progressive Radio Network, and that is where we are broadcasting. Can we say broadcasting on the Internet? Well, that's where we are on now live with Diane McEachern. Diane, welcome to the Green Front.
Hi, Betsy. How are you?
Great to have you on, and you have been doing your part to turn around our environment, and you are talking about, and have been for a long time, purse power. Tell us about, first of all, how long you have been at this. I don't want to date us too much, but you're one of the original green women, and I like
to
always give credit to those of us who have been doing it, well, those of us who have been doing it since long before it was popular, shall we say.
Oh, I know. It's really great. It's funny now when people say, boy, where did all this environmental stuff come from? It's an overnight sensation, and I'm thinking, wait a minute.
Yeah, 30-year overnight success is what one of my friends in the solar industry called it.
But I'm delighted to see how much enthusiasm there is for it, and really it's very gratifying after all these years on so many fronts to see so much excitement about doing things to protect the planet and so much, I mean, there is a lot of forward motion, and it's just one of those things where I think we finally realize now how much work we still have to do.
Exactly. One of the other comments I get a lot that you probably do too, which is, oh gee, a green program. That's really good timing. It's like, well,
right.
It wasn't for the first 12 years, but hopefully it will be now. People are paying attention, and that really is key. But then of course we have to connect the dots so they will understand what's at stake. And you have been doing that through many different media, and you have a book that I love called The Big Green Purse, and tell us sort of what got you to focus on purse power, money power, mom power, women power,
right.
in the green application.
I had spent so much time in Washington, D.C. working on trying to fix things from the policy front, and, you know, as much as we need those lawsuits your first guest was talking about, and as much as we need to pass laws and enforce regulations, that takes a lot of time. And what we're always trying to do really is get companies to reduce the amount of energy they're using and get toxics out of their problems, reduce pollution, and so on. It takes a long time to do that through the legislative and regulatory and legal process. We've got to keep doing that, but when we spend our money, it gets the attention of all these companies right away. And it's one day, really, the light bulb, the CFL literally went on, and I thought, whoa, why aren't we really focusing on the marketplace? Because we can make things happen in one season. We can make things happen in one shopping cycle if we get people to focus on the way they're spending their money.
And Lord knows we need things to happen faster, not slower these days, since we have been kind of asleep at the wheel as a country for too long.
Well, not only that, but I think that, you know, the good guys, we're the good guys, and we're never going to have as much money as the people whose behavior we're trying to change. You know, those companies, they've got billions and billions of dollars. And that's what they have on their side. What we have on our side is public opinion. It's the way we spend our money. The only reason why those companies are so rich is because we're putting our money in their pockets. So let's make those pockets green, and let's put our money in the greenest pockets that are out there right now. And every one of us can do it. I talk about the power of the purse, but it's the purse or the pocketbook. Anybody who spends money can make a difference.
And how have women in communities recently gone around to their local stores and exerted their pocket power? You're talking about a program, I think a campaign that's pretty new, and I love to have what's hot and, you know, just on, you know, off the press on the green front. And so I wanted to get you on quickly to tell our listeners what you're up to and how they can perhaps replicate it in their own.
Well, this has been a fabulous program, and it really started with the League of Women Voters in Mamaroneck, Long Island.
They say Mamaroneck. I used to live in New York. It's Mamaroneck.
You know, great. And you know, to a great degree, they were inspired by Big Green Purse, by this idea that, in fact, we would be able to change supermarket behavior. So they inspired 15 people who are members of the league, ages 17 to 92, I think, to get their shopping carts and their shopping bags and walk to the stores and meet with the store managers and talk about things they could do to go green.
And what kind of reception have they received so far?
Oh, it's been fantastic. The stores could not have been more excited, actually, about meeting with them. I'm just going to change your phone here because my battery's going.
Go ahead. We'll hold it.
Yeah. So the store managers, they met with store managers, and the managers came out to the store aisles, and they talked about the challenges that the stores face in doing things like saving energy and refrigeration costs. That's a big issue for them. Or what they can do about packaging, given the fact that so much of the stuff that they get into the stores is already overpackaged. But our group was able to also talk about a desire to see less packaging. One innovative idea that's being floated is, you know, now a lot of stores are giving you credit when you bring your own shopping bag in. Well, what about people who walk to the store instead of drive or bike to the store? What kind of a credit could they get? So there are lots of exciting ideas floating around, and I think our goal is that we'll set up a citizens, sort of a green citizens advisory committee to the stores to really help move them along and make it the transition to being more environmentally friendly faster.
I love it. And are there certain chains of stores or individual stores that are, you know, sort of really embracing this that should get some credit for really
The two stores that were really receptive to this up there on Long Island were the Stop and Shop and Trader Joe's. And, you know, people have taken issue, especially at Trader Joe's, because so much of their stuff comes in packaging. You know, there'll be two apples on a styrofoam
yep.
tray that's wrapped in plastic.
Yep.
And so, you
and
know,
they're
people,
not organic. They have very little organic produce.
So there was a lot of conversation about those, and it sounds like, you know, that store is really interested in seeing what it can do to reduce packaging and to, you know, just make a lot of changes that will reduce its environmental footprint. And then, you know, when they do that, it's like a carrot to shoppers. Shoppers want to spend their money at the best, most environmentally friendly places. They'll be inclined to go there.
An organic carrot, if you will.
Right.
I love this program because it really shows what people can do at the grassroots, because how many of us have walked into Trader Joe's? We all love Trader Joe's. And notice two, you know, red peppers in that package as you described it and said, God, I love Trader Joe's. I love their prices. I love their products. I love their community advertising. But I hate that, and I wish there was more organic produce. And I'm sure a lot of people feel that way, and I bet that they were receptive because, of course, they want to be as popular as they can be once they understand that there is demand.
Right, and that's the key thing, and that's really one of the big messages behind Big Green Purse, is that when we shift the way we spend our money, we're showing that there is demand. And we all had that high school economics class where, you know that demand forces companies to increase supply. So there's not going to be supply without demand. If we don't ask for it, they're not going to give it to us. Or they'll give us something that they want to sell but that we don't necessarily want to buy.
And you know that goes for what you buy in the store to demanding, you know, cleaner, greener legislation in Congress. And that's exactly why I know you and I have done what we're doing, which is try to educate and encourage people to understand what's at stake so they demand it so we see action. Because if we don't, we're not going to ever get really strong energy legislation.
That's absolutely right. But, you know, the other message, I guess, behind Big Green Purse is that the way you spend your money, to a certain degree, is your first line of defense, right? I mean, right now, for example, the Safe Chemicals Act is very slowly making its way through Congress. And the idea behind the Safe Chemicals Act is that it will require testing for the chemicals that we put in things like our face cream and our shampoo and the detergent that we use, the liquid detergent when we wash our dishes. But as a consumer, and we want that legislation to pass, it'll be terrific when it does. It'll require companies to meet more stringent regulations than they have to meet now. So all of that is good. But say that takes 2 or 3 years or 4 years. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, you as a consumer, right now, today, can go to the store and buy very safe makeup, very safe detergent. You don't need to wait. You can protect yourself now. And the more that you do that, the more it'll say to companies, you know, get behind this legislation because we're showing you in the marketplace already. We want you to do that.
good point, good connection, but I really only find some of the greener, cleaner makeup products at Whole Foods. I mean, do you see where you live? You're in the, is it the Washington area?
Right, Washington, D.C.
Do you see many places that are selling it? I know you can always find things online, but it shouldn't, you shouldn't have to work so hard. Are there many places, I mean, you go to the department stores, you don't see any, you know, toxin-free, chemical-free makeup products. And, you know, some
right.
of the health food stores offer, you know, more alternative, if you will, deodorants and skin lotions, that kind of thing. But
right.
makeup, unless you want to spend a lot of money on Jane Iredale, which not every woman can afford to do,
right.
It's still not so easy to find, is it?
Right. Where I'm seeing it is actually in the drugstores. You know, the CVS, Walgreens, Rite Aid, their makeup departments are huge. Their personal care products, the departments that carry personal care products, they carry everything. And even supermarkets, you know, department stores, you're right, they're really, really slow. Supermarkets, pharmacies, drugstores, they're carrying a lot, and I noticed that they're carrying more. I mean, you can always start with Burt's Bees, right? Burt's Bees is a pretty good product, and it's available just about everywhere. Tom's of Maine is another one in terms of soaps and deodorants and toothpaste and things. And they're carried just about everywhere. So you can start there, but I always say if you don't see what you're looking for, ask for it. You know, even when it comes to feminine hygiene products. You know, no store manager wants to sit in the middle of the store and talk to you about that stuff. So believe me, bring it up. Yeah, they'll get you an answer very quickly.
So let's talk about organic produce for a minute, because that's something we are seeing, you know, increasing demand for. I think it's, you know, one of the most rapidly growing, you know, product sectors, and a lot of environmental, you know, manufacturers of greener products are, you know, pleased to see that and want to replicate that with, you know, makeup, personal care products go out from there. But I was surprised to see on your website that still, with all that growth, only 3.5% of all produce in grocery stores is organic. That's
right. And, you know, there is this sense now, it's like we see green, green, green everywhere, and you think, well, boy, the revolution has happened. But, in fact, it's really barely started. There's so little in the marketplace that's still available, given how much demand there is now. So, yes, only about 3.5% in a grocery store. And that's why, again, when you go shopping, ask for it if you don't see it. And what I'm finding is that store managers usually say, well, it's not my job. It's somebody else's. And I say, well, tell your district manager or whoever your superior is that there is consumer demand for this stuff.
Right.
And
right.
there is.
Right. And if you make a strong, you know, case for that and get their agreement, they will. I mean, why shouldn't they? Hopefully they will. It's going to increase demand, and I think that's half of it, is just having conversations with these people and not assuming that there's nothing you can do about it. That's your whole message, is one of empowerment and engaging people who make the decisions and who can.
Right.
Change
well,
things.
And the other issue, too, is people will say, you know, I just can't afford it. But people don't realize how much slack they actually have in their budget, because they're spending it on stuff that doesn't really make sense. And I say that with all due respect, but for example, somebody will say to me, you know, I can't afford organic milk. It costs twice as much as conventional milk. And it does. A gallon of organic milk costs about $3 more a gallon than the conventional brand. So they'll say, I can't afford that organic milk. And meanwhile, I look in their cart and they've got two cases of bottled water in there. Right, which costs a lot more than $3.
Right,
and
or they might.
Right, it's a total waste of money, because
yeah.
there's no, bottled water isn't better, and it creates all that trash. So skip the bottled water, shift your spending to the organic milk, and you come out way ahead.
And maybe don't spend that $5 on a latte at Starbucks and brew your own and bring it in a thermos to work.
Right, exactly.
So did you call this grocery program Supermarket Sweep? Is that the name that you came up with?
Supermarket Sweep. Well, we just, it's sort of not the official name yet, but, yeah, that was the idea, that we'll sweep through these supermarkets and take note of the things they're doing right, where there's opportunity to improve, and have conversations with the store managers. So next time around, we'll see even more steps, more progress being made.
Clean sweep. I love it. So are you planning to really roll this out across the country? I know you have nothing else going on in your life, Diane, mother and all
well,
that.
Right. We definitely want to, and right now we're looking for some funding so that we can make it a real program.
I think you've got something there. I really do. It's very timely, and I applaud you for coming up with it and experimenting and reporting on the positive results and positive feedback. Since this is almost back to school time, I wonder if you have any green tips for us, for our parents out there, you might share?
Absolutely. You know, the first thing is don't go shopping until you've taken stock of what you already have. You know, kids bring home these huge lists of stuff that they're supposed to bring back to school. And people, just, you know, parents just grab the list and they head to Staples or something. We have so much stuff left over from last year that before we head to school, we take stock of what we have. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, I think especially where lunches are concerned, you know, the amount of packaging that's involved in the daily school lunch is remarkable, especially if you're using, you know, you put it in a plastic bag and you wrap everything that you're sending in a plastic bag and then you throw all that stuff away day after day after day. It amounts to pounds and pounds of trash. So invest in a really great lunch box that your kids are going to want to bring home, one that's, you know, free of all these nasty chemicals, and at biggreenpurse.com I've got a whole list of stuff that you can look for. And some of those little reusable, handy reusable containers so that they, you don't have to put the sandwich in the baggie, you don't have to put the chips in the baggie. You've just got these nice containers that can be wrapped up at the end of the lunch period and bring home.
And mom can wash it.
And mom can wash it, or the kids can wash it, but, you know, and then moms will say to me, you know, my kids won't do it. They're going to throw away everything, whether it's reusable or not. And I say, you know, put a deposit on the lunchbox. You know, make it worth a quarter for them to bring it back. And then at the end of the day, at the end of the week, they've earned a dollar that they can put in their little piggy bank, and then over time they reap the rewards of returning it.
I love that, and that I'm laughing because when my daughter was younger, I used to give her a quarter if she would remind me before we got out of the car in the Whole Foods parking lot to take my cloth bags in. She got a quarter.
Oh, that's great.
It worked. Now she's 15 and a half, and a quarter isn't enough, but I still leave them behind sometimes. It happens to the best of us busy moms.
I
also laughed when you talked about, you know, buying school products that you already have. It seems like every year my daughter, you know, at Office Depot was buying a new pencil case. I said, what happened to the one from last year? Those things don't biodegrade. They don't disappear. You didn't lose it, did you? But it seems like they like to buy new things every year, the new binders and all that. So I guess you have to find that compromise.
Right. And, you know, increasingly you can get binders and pencils and pens and all those things made from recycled materials. And there are a couple of stores, you know, Office Depot is one, Staples is one, that reliably have materials that are made from recycled fiber and whatnot. So if you are buying new, that's where you can start.
Especially paper now, they finally are stocking more high content recycled paper, high recycled content paper. Yeah.
Right.
And that's from consumer demand. Again, I remember as recently as 5 years ago going to my local, you know, Office Depot in the pretty green progressive Bay Area and having to search high and low, mostly low at the bottom of the stack, you know, at the end of the row to find something that wasn't really well marked or labeled and only had maybe 20%, you know, recycled content paper. Now they're making it more user-friendly, and that's simply because of demand. People buying it when they offered it, and people, you know, speaking out that they would like to buy it if they would just have more options.
That's exactly right. And, you know, it works on school supplies. It works on I'd like to see it working more on clothing. That's one area where I feel like there's a huge opportunity for more environmentally friendly options. And not just online. That's where department stores could really make a big difference. And, you know, I'll go into Macy's and I'll ask where their organic department is. And they usually get a little confused and they point me in the direction of a grocery store. I say, no, I'm not talking about apples. You know, I want a dress made from organic cotton or a blouse made from some kind of recycled fibers. And they get very flustered and don't have any idea what I'm talking about. But, you know, we really need, I think that's where consumer demand right now in terms of the commodities markets, I'd love to see a lot more consumer demand for the right kind of clothing, for green clothing and not just the color.
And, of course, you know, if there's more demand, there's more supply, which does bring the cost down. But isn't organic cotton and T-shirts made out of them or other clothing more expensive still than most people will pay the extra amount for? And how can we overcome that? And then other, you know, materials like hemp, like bamboo, also tend to be, well, I know bamboo can be kind of energy and water intensive as well. So I got very excited about my new bamboo sheets a few years ago till someone told me, a bamboo expert, that it's not as green a product as you think, or the process isn't as green.
Right.
So I wish there were more truly green, affordable, you know, components in our clothing available.
Yeah. I mean, part of the problem is that the organic industries, whether it's agriculture, whether it's clothing, food, whatever, they don't get the same level of federal federal subsidies that the conventional industries have gotten over decades that have driven down the cost of producing those products.
Very good point.
Right? So ironically, a farmer that sprays his field with all kinds of chemicals gets many more subsidies from the federal government to do that than a farmer that's trying to go organic. If a farmer wants to go organic, it's going to take 3 years to convert the field from one that's conventionally farmed to one that's farmed organically, and no one's paying him in the meantime to do that.
Exactly.
Whereas a conventional farmer is getting so many subsidies that make the cost of production very, very cheap.
Exactly.
So really, we are paying for it, but we're paying for it in taxes instead of direct, you know, direct price at the cash register. And that's, there's an apparent, you know, you sort of look at these conventional products and think, oh, they're so cheap. But in fact, our taxes are paying for them, so we don't see the fact that we really are paying for them.
And what you're talking about is leveling the playing field, and it goes for everything from clothing to, you know, energy sources. I mean, the solar and the wind power industries have really had to fight this because the fossil fuel status quo, you know, industries get the funding. And so, of course, they're going to have the ability to, you know, manufacture and promote and sell their products and a newer alternative. And gee, isn't it too bad that the alternatives, the healthier alternatives, are still that and not the mainstay?
Right.
And isn't that what this is all about, is reversing that equation?
Right. I mean, when you look at the high degree of tax subsidies that the extractive industries get, the loggers and the coal miners and the oil drillers.
Timber, loggers, exactly.
It's phenomenal. I mean, the renewables industry doesn't get anywhere near that level of subsidy. So, of course, I mean, if you even stop to think about how much money has been spent defending our interests, say, in the Middle East, and if that money had, in fact, been transitioned to developing a renewables industry, we wouldn't have the national security problems we face in the Middle East. We wouldn't have the climate change problem because we'd be using renewables. And we'd have an incredible jobs economy, a very strong jobs economy in the U.S. with all those jobs being generated locally to produce wind energy and solar energy and energy from biothermal, geothermal.
Yes, and just a little media anecdote. I was on Hannity and Combs a few times a few years ago, and they were going on and on. They'd have me on whenever Al Gore would say something that bothered them, and how much money is being spent on global warming, which, you know, isn't even real. And I'd shoot back, well, how much are we spending on Iraq every day? You know,
right.
and then try to connect the dots there. It's such
right.
a disconnect, and still seems to be. And I guess that's why we do what we do. Right, Diane?
Well, isn't it the truth?
Well, thank you so much for your great projects and your book and your tireless work on the green front. It's really been a pleasure having you on the
program. Honestly, I know this is your show, and people don't praise you on your own show, but you deserve a lot of credit, too, for just continuing to beat the drum and raise the issues. I mean, we've really got to continue to get the messages out there, and that's
what
you're doing.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I appreciate that. And it, just because I see this big green void there in mainstream media, and unfortunately it's still there, when I point out to people that there is not one nationally syndicated green talk show, meaning just a program like this on exclusively environmental issues, which, believe me, after 13 years and thousands of hours of original programming, there's no shortage of content and great experts like you to have on. And it's not there since my program went off Air America, and that's crazy, and working to change that. And maybe you and I can get a program on MSNBC.
Let's go for it.
Let's go for it. Or CNN or Oprah. Anybody out there listening, it's time, folks. I mean, really, this is the one issue that impacts everybody. And as my slogan used to be, greening the red and blue states one show at a time. It's not about Republican versus Democrat or liberal versus conservative. Last time I checked, we all, you know, need to eat, breathe, and drink.
Oh, that's very true. And you know, people are coming along. I mean, I think that this groundswell of support that exists right now is very exciting, and we just need to take advantage of it.
Absolutely. It's the momentum is there. We need to run with it and really amplify it. And that's what I tell everybody to do. This is not just a concern for environmentalists. This is for all of us, all of you. And I think it's great to engage mothers and parents, because who more than that category of Americans has a very direct investment in our future.
Right.
So very wise, and nice to see all these, you know, green moms groups and women's groups cropping up. And there's a lot on the web, but I really still do believe that, you know, if we had it in a place where people can catch it, you know, in the daily programming mix and not have to seek it out on a green website, which frankly people who are not green-minded yet don't tend to do, you know,
right.
That's sort of the where we have to meet the rest of America, and they deserve to know these things, and everybody should have access to greener products. And I think it's almost an elitist thing sometimes, the way environmentalists tend to gather amongst themselves, and it's almost, you know, at these green conferences, it's great and it's exciting, but it's still kind of siloed. I really always just want to take these conversations out there and get it out there in mass media outlets, and I guess that's why we keep on keeping on.
Yeah, well, we're doing a good job. I think that, you know, there's more work to be done, but we've gotten it started, and there are a lot of people who are keeping it going, and that's what really counts.
And I can't think of any more important work, and one of these days we'll get properly paid for our green efforts. The green will be behind the green. It's starting to happen. So thanks again, and appreciate your time, Diane. And your website, for those who are not aware, is biggreenpurse.com or org?
.com.
Big Green Purse. I hope the book is doing well. I tell people about it all the time. And are you working on another one, or is that going to be your...
I am, but I'm not saying what until I get the contract. So
I'll let you know
as soon as I nail it down.
Okay. You let us know, and we'll put it on the green front, and we'll promote the heck out of it, because I've heard you speak. You're a very informative and inspiring speaker. And I have your book. I've looked through it. And one of these days I'll have time to read all the green books I have sitting on my nightstand. But thanks for putting it out there and continuing to come up with new and innovative ways to help raise green consciousness.
Thanks so much, Betsy.
That'll do it for this edition of The Green Front. I'm your host, Betsy Rosenberg. As always, happy to bring you stories from the green front lines. There's no shortage of them and no shortage of great green experts. I hope you've enjoyed today's program. Check it out at www.thegreenfront.com. And check in next week. I'll have another exciting program. Don't have time to tell you about it, but I promise it'll be good. Go out and have a great green week.